Good morning, and a particular welcome to any visitors and people also who are watching us online. My name is Andy Pollock. I'm a member of this congregation. This service is going to be a little different from usual. It's going to have a Buddhist flavour. I'm not a Buddhist, as you all know. I'm a Unitarian, but I have learnt some helpful things in recent years from Buddhist meditation practice and from reading some books on Buddhism, and I want to share some of those things with you this morning. Tomorrow is also Bill and Morag's, Bill Darlison, our wonderful former minister. It's his and his wife's birthday. They have the same birthday tomorrow, so please spare a thought and maybe a prayer for Bill and Morag. As the members of the congregation will know, there's a tradition here of members of the congregation taking the service occasionally. That's even more the case now that we're in between ministers, our also wonderful minister Bridget having retired at the end of May. So just bear in mind a Buddhist flavor, not Buddhism, but a Buddhist flavor. May all sentient beings be well and enjoy the root of happiness, free from suffering and the root of suffering. May they not be separated from the joy beyond sorrow. May they dwell in spacious equanimity, free from craving, fear, and ignorance. And the first hymn is number 10, Immortal Love.
Morning. I'm going to read from Age Proof by Professor Roseanne Kenny. Just some short extracts from chapter 4, which is Never a Dull Moment, Laughter and Purpose. It's a long chapter, but I'll only read some short extracts. Laughter or a smile is the shortest distance between two people. We are wired to be happy and share the happy experience with others through laughter. Laughter is a social behavior. We use it to bond and to communicate. You can actually tell the strength of a relationship between people from the tone and type of laughter. But you already know this, the laughter of a child being tickled, the laughter from someone who feels obliged to laugh at their boss's jokes, and the laughter between good friends are all different and convey the type of relationship being shared. We laugh less frequently as we get older, yet the benefits are retained for life. Laughter is a simple way to boost many of the age-related cell pathways, which is why it is particularly important to us as we get older. As well as being a feel-good action, laughter contributes to better health by muscular exercise, increased respiration and blood circulation, improvements in digestion, emotional catharsis and joy. Healthy children laugh as much as 400 times a day, but older adults laugh only 15 times a day. I reflected as I wrote this, as I couldn't recall having laughed today, and it was only 6 p.m. Most of the time when we laugh, it has little to do with humor and more to do with social bond. We use laughter and humor to manage situations, to display our willingness to engage, to show those present that we are on the same page. So laughter connects us with others, just as with smiling. Kindness and laughter is contagious. We can catch laughter from someone else, and we're most likely to catch it if we know them. By elevating mood, laughter reduces stress levels in all the parties involved. The benefits of humor and laughter are well detailed through history, and as early as the reign of Solomon, 971 to 931 BC, in the Book of Proverbs, where it states, A cheerful heart is good medicine, but a crushed spirit dries up the bones, indicating that even then people understand that a joyful spirit has positive therapeutic effects. Laughter also increases endorphins, chemicals produced naturally by the nervous system to cope with pain and stress, the feel-good chemicals. So in summary, it is evident that laughter and purpose are core to longevity and good health. And importantly, it is within our capacity to ensure that both are centred in our lives and to encourage others to realise their potential. I wonder, could I indulge another minute to try and put a smile on your face, because 15 times a day for my age, that's terrible. As this is the second Sunday, it's Children's Sunday. If a child ever tells you a joke, and mine might not be a joke, you know, like, they will ask you a question like, when is a door not a door, when it's a jar? That was the very first joke I ever heard. But a young teenager, asked me the other day the same kind of question. She said, what do you call a convict with a superiority complex going downstairs? So I obliged and said, I don't know, what do you call a convict with a superiority complex going downstairs? And she said, a condescending con descending. Okay, thank you.
I think that might be the high point of the service when you hear what I have to say later. Okay, the children's story, please. So if any children would like to come to the front, I'll tell you, this is a story for the children and the adults. But if the children would come to the front, I'd be really grateful. Thank you. Thank you very much for turning up and coming to the front. Is that clear? Can everybody hear at the back? This is a very famous Buddhist story. Buddha was a great religious teacher who lived 2,500 years ago. And he gave his name to a whole religion, which is very common in India and in Southeast Asia and in many other parts of the world as well. And I'm going to talk a bit about Buddhism later on in my address. So this is a story called Kisa and the Mustard Seed. And it's what they call a parable. So it's a story with a lesson. So Kisa was a young woman who grew up in an Indian village a long time ago. And when she got married, she married a man in a very, very faraway village. So in the early years of her marriage, she was quite lonely and unhappy until she had a baby boy. And then she was very, very happy. But a few years on, the baby boy got ill and he died. And Kisa was understandably deeply, deeply upset. And she couldn't believe that her baby was dead. She thought he must be asleep. And she thought that maybe she could get some special medicine that would wake him up and make him better. So she went to her neighbor and said, would you have any medicine who could... She was carrying the baby, the dead baby, in a bundle. If you have any special medicine for my sick baby. And the neighbor said, oh no, I'm too busy. I'm not try the doctor. So she went over to the doctor. And the doctor could see the baby in Kisa's arms and he could see that the baby was dead. I haven't got any medicine that you need, the doctor said, and he wondered what he could suggest. And he suddenly remembered that the Buddha, the great religious teacher, was outside town, staying outside town. So he said to Kisa, why don't you go and ask the Buddha? He's a very wise and very kind man, and he might be able to help you. So quickly, Kisa set off and found the Buddha sitting under a tree. And she said, my name is Kisa. I've been looking everywhere for medicine for my son. She was holding the little dead baby in a bundle. The Buddha looked at the bundle and he said to himself, how could Kisa be helped to accept the truth that her little boy had really died? So he said to her, go into town. Kisa, if you want some medicine, you must have some mustard seeds. So go into town and ask people if they can give you some mustard seeds, but only accept mustard seeds from a house in which no one has died. So quickly Kisa set off back into town. At the first house she called in, a young woman answered the door. Could I have some mustard seeds to make some medicine? She asked. The woman went back inside and came out with some mustard seeds. Here you are, she said. Kisa was about to leave, and then she just remembered what the Buddha had said, and she said, oh, has anybody died in this house? Ah, yes, replied the young woman. A few months ago, my grandmother died very peacefully. Such a lovely old lady. So Kisa said, well, in that case, I'm sorry, I can't take the seeds. She went to the next house, and it was an old man sitting outside, and again, she asked for mustard seeds. He went inside, he brought her out mustard seeds, and then she asked, has anybody died in this house recently? And the old man said, Jess, yes, unfortunately, just last year, my daughter died. We all still miss her. And she went to the third house, and it was a young boy answered the door. Please, have you got some mustard seeds, she asked. I'm sure we had, said the boy. And he went back inside to his mother, and he got some mustard seeds. And Kisa asked him again, can you tell me, please, if anybody ever died in this house? Yes, replied the boy quietly. When I was still a little baby, my dad died. I can't even remember him. I'm sorry about your dad, Kisa, but I can't take the mustard seeds. As Kisa went from door to door, the answer was the same. Everyone had lost a loved one. If not last year, then a long time ago. Kisa had no mustard seeds, but now she understood why she would not be able to find any. She looked at the little bundle in her arms. I'm sorry, my little one. You have gone to another life, and I did not want to let you go. Let us find a resting place for you. In the evening, she returned to the Buddha. She was no longer carrying the little bundle. Her face was now much calmer. She said, I wasn't able to find any mustard seeds, but I now understand that everyone loses people they love. I have laid my baby to rest and am now at peace. Thank you. You have done well, Kisa, said the Buddha, for there is nothing stronger in all the world than a mother's love. Would you like to stay with me for a while? As the sun went down, Kisa and the Buddha talked. She told him about her life and her baby. He listened kindly. The Buddha reminded Kisa that plants grow in the spring, flower in the summer, and die in the winter, and that new plants grow the following year. Similarly, people are born and eventually die. Kisa now understood that was just how things are. Talking to the Buddha and listening to his kind words helped Kisa a lot. That very evening, she decided to become one of his followers. Thank you. I think there's Sunday club downstairs today, isn't that right? Okay, Denise, thank you very much. So if you'd like to go with Denise and go down to Sunday club downstairs, that would be. Okay, so the second hymn is Morning Has Broken, number 38.
For my reading, I'm going to read a poem by the American poet Kay Ryan. It's a very short poem, so I'm going to read it. I'm just going to then give a couple of lines of commentary and then read it again. And it's called The Niagara River. The Niagara River by Kay Ryan. As though the river were a floor, we position our table and chairs upon it, eat and have conversation. As it moves along, we notice, as calmly as though dining room paintings were being replaced, the changing scenes along the shore. We do know that this is the Niagara River, but it's hard to remember what that means. So Kay Ryan's extraordinary short poem encapsulates our human situation. Time, like Ryan's river, is constantly flowing towards our death. But we treat this ever-changing river flowing inexorably, powerfully towards the huge waterfall that is the end of life as if it were merely a floor on which to arrange the furniture of our life. The world changes, but we stay the same, or so it feels. So here's the poem again. As though the river were a floor, we position our tables and chairs upon it, eat and have conversation. As it moves along, we notice, as calmly as though dining room paintings were being replaced, the changing scenes along the shore. We do know this is the Niagara River, but it is hard to remember what that means. So the prayers are from the Buddhist tradition as well, but they're also in our Singing the Living Tradition book. And so this prayer is prayer 598. And if people would like to speak the words in italics, and I'll speak the words in Roman letters. So it's called Without Hate, and it's number 598 in the Living Tradition book, in the hymn book. May every creature abound in well-being and peace. May every living being, weak or strong, the long and the small, the short and the medium-sized, the mean and the great. May every living being, seen or unseen, those dwelling far off, those living nearby, those already born, those waiting to be born, may all attain inward peace. Let no one deceive another. Let no one despise another in any situation. Let no one from antipathy or hatred wish evil to anyone at all. Just as a mother with her own life protects her only child from hurt, so within yourself foster a limitless concern for every living creature. Love unrestrained, without hate or enmity. And to overcome by drowsiness, devote your mind entirely to this. It is known as living the life divine. If you have we'll say the prayer that Jesus taught us. Our Father, art in heaven, hallowed be thy name, thy kingdom come, thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen. So we'll have a short period of prayer, personal prayer and reflection, and that will be brought to the end, to an end by Josh playing us some music. Thank you, Josh, for such an uplifting piece of music. Like many people, I suffer from anxiety and mild depression. Occasionally, these conditions deepen. This has been happening to me off and on in recent months. This is nothing new. While researching this address, I came across a similar address I gave in this church 26 years ago. Then I talked about a helpful book called Care of the Soul by an American psychologist called Thomas Moore. This time, I'm going to reference this book, Life with Full Attention, by a London-based Buddhist teacher and poet called Maitreya Bandhu. I have read this book 5 times over the past 10 years, so it must be having some influence over me. Again, like many people, I have a problem with a lack of self-esteem. I compare myself with others. I put myself down. I become a bit overwhelmed sometimes with negative thoughts. I call this my down the plug hole mood. Just about everything can be dragged into it. Negative states of mind are like lobster pots. They are easy to get into, but difficult to get out of. Another way of putting this is to use the Buddhist concept of the second dart or the second arrow. We can hypnotize ourselves into painful states of mind. When we say to ourselves, I'm feeling overwhelmed, or I'm about to relapse into depression, we shoot ourselves with the second arrow. We shoot ourselves with a big dose of fear and dread. We get locked into a negative feedback loop between painful feelings and painful thoughts. One way I try to combat my anxiety is through Buddhist meditation, which I try to do every morning and twice a week with a group in the Dublin Buddhist Centre. Buddhist meditation emphasizes that the anxious thoughts we experience are just that. They're thoughts, passing thoughts, not facts. Indeed, the facts will show that I have little reason to be depressed. I have had a rather interesting and productive life. I have lived in 5 countries in 7 continents, although I have always loved Ireland above any other place on earth. I have been reasonably successful in my chosen career of journalism. I have co-written and edited 3 books. I have worked for peace and cooperation in Northern Ireland. Above all, I have been hugely blessed by the love of 3 marvelous women, my wife Dhirin and my daughters Soracha and Grania. So I follow Buddhist and Christian teaching to make time for the people and things I love. I try to be a good, caring husband and father. I try to cultivate warm friendships. I try to walk in the hills and mountains where I am particularly relaxed and happy. I go cycling around Ireland for the same reasons. I take daily physical exercise and take pleasure in the beauties of nature. I try as much as I can to help those of my fellow humans who are less privileged and more unfortunate than me. And usually my times of enjoying and cherishing someone or something and helping other people gradually change how I feel about myself. But I also find regular Buddhist meditation helpful in that it calms my mind more generally. We 21st century humans suffer from a dragon's head, a mind that races with thoughts and ideas, arguments and opinions, emails and WhatsApps and to-do lists. We have a snake's body, long and thin and underdeveloped. The Buddha, who lived 2,500 years ago, would experience us as being one-sidedly cerebral, with a marked tendency to rationalize, ruminate, and abstract. That is certainly the way I am. So I like to cultivate, through my morning meditation, the first of the Buddha's spheres of mindfulness, mindfulness of the body. Buddhists believe body awareness roots us in direct physical sensations, and as such, is a vital contribution to avoid being caught up in painful thoughts. I bring my mind into my body by doing a toe to top of the head body scan. I focus on the lower and middle parts of my body and on my breath as I concentrate on those parts. I feel in particular my feet, stomach, and heart, and the weight of my body on the floor. I focus on my breath passing through my body. This is usually a good antidote for anxiety and tension. I also try to cultivate the second and third of the Buddha's spheres of mindfulness. Mindfulness of feeling, what Buddhists call vedana, and mindfulness of mind and heart. I try to focus on beautiful and restful and natural images. My daughter's and granddaughter's faces, the Wicklow Hills, the Atlantic Ocean off the Kerry and West Cork coasts. I think of ordinary things, a jar of honey, reading a book, walking along a bog road. Thinking about nature is particularly important here. These ordinary things are made significant by a mind that is calm, alert, inquisitive, and unpreoccupied. The kind of consciousness I hope that meditation and mindfulness are helping me to cultivate, not always successfully, I should add. I try to cultivate appreciation of beauty and nature and art and music and sport. Maitreya Bayandu writes, "The spiritual value of the appreciative mode is in its non-utilitarian, non-acquisitive nature. Appreciation is an end in itself. It is its own reward. And as we develop this appreciative mode, we start to become sensitized to how so much of modern life is ugly. We notice how banal the media are, can be, how unpalatable harsh speech, cynical ideas, and snide remarks are. we start to notice that egoism, in all of its myriad guises, is not very productive. We see how uncreative it is, how coarse and predictable. True appreciation is a letting go of self, a letting go of egoism. When we are absorbed in the appreciative awareness of a wide blue sky or a tree or a poem or a songbird, we forget ourselves, and by doing so, we transcend ourselves. The arts can play an important role here. The pleasure one gets from art is not based on egotistic desire. We can read a poem, listen to a piece of music, as we've just done, or look at a painting and feel uplifted. We can come away from watching King Lear or The Cherry Orchard and feel we have gained a deeper understanding of what it means to be human. This is what Seamus Heaney calls the redress of poetry, that the arts can give us back our life, purified and absolved by the imaginative vision of the artist. The Buddha communicated the essence of spiritual life, the culminating insight of life with full attention in the words, "In the seen, only the seen. In the heard, only the heard." This is experience with nothing left over, with nothing of me added on, writes Maitreya Bandhu. It is pure, selfless appreciation. When we see things this way, without describing, grasping, or referring everything back to me, 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 we see with what Buddhists call vidya. When we see with vidya, the world begins to shine. We look at a building, a mop bucket, or a bramble hedge, and there seems to be something more. It seems alive in a way we can't pin down. The life in the world out there seems connected to the life in here. Both seem more vivid and at the same time more mysterious. The chasm between the world and the self has begun to disappear. Buddhism teaches that freedom is essentially freedom from self. One could say that letting go of the prison of self is the goal of Buddhism. I find that a very attractive idea. I do Buddhist meditation to free myself from the negativity of my racing mind and its sometimes toxic thoughts, to find some calm and serenity in this speedy and self-obsessed and often frightening world. However, there is far more to Buddhism than this psychological sanctuary. Maitreya Bandhu writes, "In the early stages of spiritual life, we are likely to be motivated by the need for personal happiness and freedom from pain. We will see mindfulness as a way of becoming happier in our skin and more at home in the world. Practicing mindfulness will help us to achieve this so long as we learn carefully and practice regularly. But our motivations can change. We might discover that our quest for personal happiness has become limiting and after a certain point, self-defeating. We might start to feel motivated more by the sufferings of other people rather than by our own. We might even start to realize that the only way to true happiness is to transcend self altogether. This is the transcendental orientation of Buddhism. A Buddhist approach to mindfulness takes into account a psychological orientation, but will always guide us towards a transcendental one. Buddhism is emphatic in saying that it is only by liberating ourselves from our belief in a separate self, separate from others and from the world, that we will finally be happy. I am not ready for this move beyond the psychological and towards the transcendental. I accept the central Buddhist teaching that all things are impermanent and that this precious life has to be lived now, the world has to be fully appreciated now, that life must be lived with as full an attention as possible now because it will not last. However, I find it hard to get my head around the other central Buddhist concept that a fixed and really existing self is a delusion. which will disappear when all attachments are gotten rid of, including attachments to dearly loved ones, and enlightenment is achieved. Maybe I never will be a complete convert. Maybe Buddhist teaching about spiritual death and spiritual rebirth all sounds too much like being born again, which my early upbringing in evangelical Protestant Northern Ireland turned me against. However, there are other important things even an agnostic like me can learn from Buddhism. For example, generosity is something I try to cultivate. The Buddha says that if you are generous, the whole of the spiritual life is open to you. You can have many faults and shortcomings, but if you are generous, many things are possible. I find generosity is a practical way of improving my self-esteem. When I feel bad about myself, I become self-absorbed. Self-absorption is one of the major symptoms of depression. A simple antidote to this painful self-preoccupation is generosity. Generosity is something one can practice in any state of mind. You don't have to be in a good mood. I believe that if I give to other people, even in small ways, I often find a sense of inner fullness and calm. Generosity creates positive relationships with others, which is vital to our happiness. Maitreya Bandhu writes, "Your relationship with other people is the key to happiness. If you can listen to people, give to them, be kind to them, you will yourself become happier. You will be freed from corrosive self-absorption, and you will avoid the danger of spiritualized selfishness. All genuine spiritual practice is concerned with helping others. When we forgive people, when we put ourselves out for them, when we overcome our irritations and resentments concerning them, we transcend ourselves. Self-transcendence is the goal of Buddhism." One mantra I use in my meditation practice sums up my attitude to life and action, and I suppose makes me a bit of a Buddhist. It goes like this. "With deeds of loving kindness, I purify my body. With open-handed generosity, I purify my body. With stillness, simplicity, and contentment, I purify my body. With truthful communication, I purify my speech. With mindfulness, clear and radiant, I purify my mind. With gratitude, I purify my heart." Amen. And the next hymn is number 20, Be Thou My Vision. There are a couple of notices. The Dublin Bach Singers will hold a concert today at 3:30 this afternoon in the church. They will perform a varied program, including works by Elgar, Holst, and many more. Tickets are €15 at the door. That's at 3:30. The concert, which begins again at 3:30, will be approximately 1 hour. The church is marching in the Pride Parade on the 29th of June behind our church banner. If you would like to take part, please see Gavin. We will meet at 11:30 a.m. in O'Connell Street. Where's that in O'Connell Street, Gavin? That's not at the far end, Parnell Square end. Pennies. Where? Pennies. Okay, Pennies. All right, okay. We will meet at Pennies at 11:30 a.m. in O'Connell Street, and the parade will finish at 3 p.m. in Merrion Square. Okay, everybody's welcome. We have coffee downstairs in this church and usually kind of things to nibble. So, and particularly the visitors, please come down and join us and chat and talk and meet the members of the church. So that's after church, immediately downstairs. Okay, one of the pleasures of taking an occasional service is you get to choose the hymns. And you choose, obviously one chooses one's favorite hymn. This next one is my favorite hymn in the world. Now, like the innovator he is, the musical innovator he is, Josh wants us to learn new hymns. but I've been very self-indulgent today, and they're all old hymns which I like. So the final hymn is number 159, This Is My Song. So the closing words are again in the Living Tradition book, and they're number 597. So if people would like to respond with the words in italics to my closing words, love versus hate. Never does hatred cease by hating in return. Only through love can hatred come to an end. Victory breeds hatred. The conquered dwell in sorrow and resentment. They who give up all thought of victory or defeat may be calm and live happily at peace. Let us overcome violence by gentleness. Let us overcome evil by good. Let us overcome the miserly by liberality. Let us overcome the liar by truth.